테랑이 마리에 오랑이 누이에 투이 호네 오 파프투 누크에 타크토네 오테 타이어에 아피네 이아 타토 티헤 마오리 오라. This is the Green Desk on 95BFM.
Nau mai, haere mai ki te hōtaka Green Desk. Tuatahi mō tēnei tau. Welcome to the first Green Desk of the year. Ko Bronwyn Wild, tōku ingoa. I'm Bronny, your new host, taking over from the magnificent Mangrove Mitch. I'm a student here at Auckland Uni, doing law and a BA in politics and Māori studies, but I like to think that everything I do is very much through an environmental lens. I've just spent the summer working for the Department of Conservation in Te Matauā Māui in the Hawke's Bay, so you can look forward to at least the first couple interviews to be do with some of the inspiring environmentalists that I met during my time there. And speaking of, today's interview is with Rebecca Dedrickson from Kotahi Aviary, a captive breeding facility for the critically endangered shore plover bird. And if you're thinking, what exactly is a shore plover, then you're probably in the same boat as a lot of New Zealanders. But they are an endemic bird and are very much in need of the spotlight, as there are only around 250 birds left. It was because of this that in 2018 the Department of Conservation partnered with local Hawke's Bay philanthropist Andy Lowe to create Kotahi Aviary, the third captive breeding facility for shore plover in the country. I spoke to Rebecca Dedrickson, the sole employee at the Aviary, about some of the successes and challenges of the project so far. She began by telling me, in her own words, what exactly a shore plover is.
So a shore plover is a species of shore bird. It's in the plover family, and the shore plover specifically is endemic to New Zealand, which means it's only found in New Zealand, nowhere else. And historically, it had a range across the whole of New Zealand, but in recent times it's restricted to the Chatham Islands. So it's a small, nondescript looking bird, brown back, white tummy, cool haircut, and bobs along the beach looking for bugs.
I always like the little orange eyeliner. I think that's quite a standout feature for me.
People say they look like they've got a black bandana on their face.
Oh, that's quite cool. All right. And so I understand that the shore plover are in a little bit of trouble at the moment. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so the shore plover is special in the way that it nests. For a shore bird, a lot of the time they nest out in the open, and the eggs are really well camouflaged so that aerial predators such as seagulls or falcons can't spot the eggs that effectively. Shore plover tend to nest under grasses or under rocks and under logs. And while this is really great to protect them from avian predators, it does cause a lot of problems with the mammalian predator populations we have across New Zealand. So ever since mammalian predators were brought into the country, the shore plover population dropped really drastically because they just don't have a defence mechanism against these land predators. They do have a really strong smell. So a lot of our New Zealand animals have quite unique scents to them, and shore plover are quite lemony. And when they nest underneath grasses, that smell gets quite strong, and it's basically a welcome doormat to come and find their nests.
So speaking on that, what are the main issues that have caused this threat status, which I believe are they nationally critical?
Yeah, so shore plover in the New Zealand threat classification system, they are nationally critical. They have a population at the moment of about 250 individuals, and that includes those in captive breed and release facilities, as well as that last remaining population on the Chatham Islands, which has about 150 birds from the wild.
Talking about those captive breed and release facilities, how does your work tie into the recovering of the shore plover?
So September 2018, we got our first birds in our captive breed and release program in the Hawke's Bay. So the goal of the program is to breed these birds in captivity, give them a strong start to life, and then release them onto predator-free offshore islands. So we're the third established facility in New Zealand. The first two are in Christchurch at the Isaacs Conservation Trust, and Pukaha Mount Bruce in the Wairarapa.
And what are some of the successes you've had thus far in your year or so of being a captive breeding facility?
So since we're so new, our successes include keeping the birds alive and healthy and managing their population and their behaviours. So we've just basically been learning about the birds, learning what normal behaviours are, learning what a sick bird looks like and how to feed them and all those things. So that's been our biggest success, is just hitting the ground running and doing a great job of looking after these birds to a high standard of welfare. But our biggest success would be our chick that we produced. So we have our little Tumanako awaiting his release.
Where's he going?
So Tumanako, our chick, he is going to be released on Mana Island. So this year, that's the island we're beginning to repopulate, and for the next few years that'll be our target island to repopulate with shore plover.
And because I understand that Mana Island did used to have shore plover in the past, right?
Yeah, so Mana Island did used to have a population of shore plover that was really well established, but when it comes to species like shore plover that are really delicate and really prone to being predated, even one predator species or one individual predator can have a really huge impact. So unfortunately, a rat did make it onto Mana Island, and that rat over a season or over a year did manage to reduce the population number by quite a drastic amount. But since then, Mana Island is completely predator-free, and even native predators or native species like moorpark and pukeko and falcons can also prey on shore plover. So it's something the recovery group really has to think of, is what islands suit with habitat and what islands suit with predator risks.
Yeah, just deviating slightly, because I think that is a really interesting point in conservation. I mean, these birds used to exist in their own ecosystems before we even got here. And some of the birds that we are protecting, they also predate on other birds that we're trying to protect. So how we kind of balance that?
Yeah, it's a fine line. So every species has its intrinsic value, its natural value, and there are species like the New Zealand falcon which are endangered also, and they are capable of playing a big part in the predation of other species like shore plover, but only in really extreme cases would any control be done for these birds. We try and make it a well-balanced environment for them. But we also have to make sure that we're not putting species like the shore plover, which would be a prey species, right into the habitats of these other native predatory species.
Just taking you back to when you were talking about successes, you did say just keeping the birds alive was one of the major successes, which sounds a bit comedic, but it is true because, I mean, it's no easy feat keeping birds alive in a captive facility such as this. So I was wondering if you could talk to some of the challenges that you faced.
When it comes to captive animals, you have to maintain a really high level of welfare for them. You know, these animals don't get to choose what they eat, really. Our birds have a river that they can forage in. It runs through the aviary. It's got an abundance of water invertebrates, so mayflies and caddisflies, even just little boatmen. But they rely on us to make sure that they're healthy and well looked after and living a good standard of life. We work quite closely with volunteers, and so they'll get a really strict training regime to know what to look for, what might be concerning behaviours.
What are some of the things that those volunteers would be looking out for in those chicks?
So when it comes to shore plover specifically as a species, they are known as a delicate bird. They do get disturbed really easily, and one thing they can do if they get a sudden fright is they can panic fly around their aviaries, and when they panic fly and lose control, they do start to hit themselves into the mesh of their home. So what our volunteers get walked through is what a normal shore plover looks like, and if they see a shore plover get a fright and maybe hit some soft mesh, they just have to make sure that it's walking and that it's in one piece and that it's healthy still. And shore plover do get some health concerns as well, so they do have a tendency to contract avian pox. And avian pox shows itself in large lumps generally on their feet, and so the volunteers learn how to pinpoint what it is and how bad that may be, so whether we need to intervene with medical care or anything as well.
I do think that's something interesting, the fact that pox is kind of this unsolved mystery that only occurs in captivity and why it doesn't occur in the wild.
Yeah, so they're not sure really why the captive birds are the ones that contract avian pox more so than the wild populations. If we released a shore plover with pox into a wild population, that wild population would most likely contract it as well. So when we do our breed and release, we quarantine screen the chicks before they go, checking for anything like salmonella, coccidia, but also to make sure that they haven't got any signs and symptoms of pox, because the last thing we want to do is release it into a wild population. So they don't know why it's worse in captivity, but it is something they could get in the wild if we weren't really careful about our translocation processes.
I'm not saying this is any way related at all, but this is just an observation that I've made, which I think is interesting, that given that they are shorebirds, that obviously the captive breeding facilities that we've had, it just so happens that the land that's available and the water that's available, it tends to be inland and freshwater sources. So how do you kind of deal with that?
The problem with them being a shorebird is you can't build a metal aviary on a beach next to saltwater. It'll rust and it'll end badly. So when the captive facilities are built, that you do have to take that into consideration. So they did look into that in the Hawke's Bay here, but it just wasn't feasible with materials and costs and things like that. So the next thing you need to look for when it comes to building a habitat for these birds is water supply and peace and quiet, basically. Because they are such a delicate species, and they get frights quite easily, you need to make sure that there's not constant passing by vehicles and humans. So you need to make sure that the river source is clean. On top of that, we do still provide them with salt water. So when we give them their food, we do make sure that it's sat in a dish of salt water, and that way their feet do have that interaction with salt, and they do still stay nice and hard and tough. And so when they do go on the translocation trips and they make it to an offshore island, their feet don't suddenly interact with sand and salt and, you know, possibly get some new injuries that they haven't had before.
I'm aware that there are only 7 birds at Kotahi Aviary, or 8 now with the chick Tumanuckle, but he's soon to be on his way. So what about those concerns of genetic diversity, seeing as there is such a small gene pool of shore plover left?
We're actually really lucky when it comes to that problem, because in recent years we've had a lady called Alina Kubunovska, and she is doing her PhD, I think, down at Canterbury University, and she's been helping us with the genomics of shore plover. So rather than working off phylogenetic trees, you know, which parent makes which offspring and who can and can't breed, when you get down to the genomics and the gene levels, you actually open up a whole new avenue of genetic possibilities. So birds that you think through the phylogenetic tree system can't breed, if you look at their genetics that comes from the whole history of their parentage, you actually do get some refreshed genetic pairings. So when we run the breeding programs, we try and keep that as natural as possible. Sometimes we can't, unfortunately, and we do make pairings for genetic diversity because we really don't want that bottleneck to get even worse. DOC and the Species Recovery Group are working with the Chatham Islands to potentially bring some eggs onto the mainland to refresh the genetics by a big margin. So really freshen it all up so we can keep going for many years to come.
What are the hopes for the future of the shore plover from programs such as this?
I guess the predator-free 2050 target that the whole of New Zealand is currently working towards is the aspiration for shore plover and all of the other New Zealand species as well. So while we can repopulate offshore islands, there are only a specific number that really suit shore plover, and it is the same with a lot of our other endemic or native species, that we will eventually run out of these island predator-free spaces. But if we can keep that work going on the mainland and make those environments safe, then the dream would be one day to have them just on the beaches out on the mainland for everyone to see.
That was The Green Desk on 95 BFM. Tihe Modi Ora.
That was Rebecca Diedrichsen from